The Church of God the Eternal presents The Exploitation of Social Issues. Of the subtopic entitled, What is a Godly Work Ethic? This is the number 2 tape and will be given by Mr. Raymond Cole.
I think it might be beneficial if I were to just give you some indication of some of the subjects that I am intending to cover, and that way you can begin to see the necessity of the general information that I'm giving in this series at the present time. Probably will be about 3 sermons before I complete it. Because, as I said, it's difficult to understand the specifics of any particular thing if you do not see it in its perspective, that it's broader scope. And if you cannot see it from that broad scope, then how in the world can you understand the specifics that are involved? Because you have nothing into which on which you can base a judgmental consideration. So we're going to talk about this matter of impoverishment. Poverty that is devastating whole sectors of this world. We're going to talk about this matter of social, as they call it. I don't mean the actual figure. I don't mean the organization of they call Social Security. I'm talking about Social Security, which means your right to a station in life. In that context, I will be talking about these other things. So we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about the impoverished conditions of this world. And we're going to talk about the work ethic, which is the beginning of this. We're going to talk about such things as fringe benefits. I'm not saying we can get rid of them. But I feel that I would be rendering a giant disservice if I did not help us to recognize what is happening and how they have intended to get to the American public and to make us pray. And they've done a very classic job of it. And I mean a classic job of it, because there are millions who would stand right up and fight about it, rather than to attempt to step back and take a long objective look at it, and not realizing that they are slitting their own throats while they're doing it. Social Security, in the terms that they have advanced, is the greatest heist that has ever occurred, I guess, within the field of humanity. You have been taken to the cleaners. And because people have never stopped to analyze it and to realize what has happened to them, it sounds so good. But I'd like one of these times to use the actual figures of an ordinary man who has worked for an ordinary period of time and show you how much farther ahead you would be if the money had been yours. Why, there is no worthy comparison. Instead of the piddling income of $200, $300, or $500 a month, or whatever it is, you would be taking home $3,000, $4,000, and $5,000. The same money. Don't ever think you've been handed, you know, something on a gravy train. It just isn't true. You have been exploited to the nth degree while they've lulled you into sleep, the American public. So we're going to cover all these subjects. I just get fed up reading newspapers and so on about, the agitation that's going on, and oh my, how absolutely distraught people are, because we're going to take the Social Security. Forget money, that isn't what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the concept. We're going to take Social Security away from the American people because we do this or we do that or we do something else. I'm sick of reading it. Because whether we want to recognize it or not, I happen to see through it. And I know what they're doing to you. While they chop the American individual family into pieces, they're destroying the family. They talk about all this need to pour more money into education. Why don't you just take it out and pour it down a rat hole? You'd be better off than in what they call education today. It is an absolute fact that education today is at its lowest ebb ever. I don't care how much scientific knowledge they have. In the ability to control their lives, in the ability to live exemplary lives, we have never been lower in the world. And yet today, we spend 10, 15, 20, 25 times as much money as they did back in the days when our grandparents went to school. I've oftentimes mentioned to various ones that I have seen a few of the mathematical textbooks that some of my uncles used. And I want you to remember that I was an A student in math from start to finish. After I had gone through my maximum in math, I couldn't even have begun to handle the math of an eighth grader in those days. We got smart, did we? We're so dumb we don't even recognize it. While the rats have been out here playing, we have been fed a line of garbage. And human beings have been buying it. And the most gigantic, most colossal, what do they call them, in political, they call them political action committees, PACs. But these groups that appear before Congress, there's a term they use for them, and I can't get a hold of it right now. They go up there and exert pressure on our Congress to get certain bills passed and to bring to pass certain things. And I have never in my life seen the deluge of literature and appeals from various organizations want to support them, you know, to go up and fight this issue. And it just occurred to me, we pay our senators, we pay our representatives, and then we have to establish PAC committees and other committees to go up and fight them. Does that make sense? Why don't we get a baseball bat out and just run the senators and the representatives into the Pacific Ocean or the Atlantic Ocean? Get rid of them. Why in the world do we put one group up there and pay them horrible prices? And then we turn around and support at an equal price a bunch of PAC committees to fight them. Did somebody do that by design? Yes, they did. I'm like that old German, too late, too smart, or too late, smart. And maybe people are going to finally wise up if they live long enough. But we have been played suckers for so long that it seems natural to be a sucker and to take whatever little thing they offer us. Brethren, we may not change anything, but we better change what's up here. Because I'll tell you, there is a day coming when God Almighty is going to step in, and I don't care how many governments there are. I don't care what their military armaments are. I don't care what authority they think they possess. They're not going to powerfully intervene on the part of that individual, because he's going to slap them down and say, "You sit there and listen. You're not going to say anything." Because God is going to do it, and I'll tell you, those people are going to be brought down. But there's going to be an awful lot of complaining. And God is finally going to restructure this earth on the basis of something that counts, when a man can take to himself a young wife and go out and build something that is his, and it stays his. I guess the people I feel the most sorry for today are young people. The great American dream they talk about, the day when they could lay hold on something and they can build and they could achieve. Oh yes, occasionally they allow someone to do it today because they want to keep that dream alive, because they want to exploit. But whatever happens today is by permission. The powers that be allow it, and for reason. I guess the thing that was most frustrating to me and irritated me the most was to find that the same money backs up the Democrats, Republicans, the liberals, the ultra-liberals, the conservatives, and the ultra-conservatives. Exactly the same money. So that they can agitate the spirit. I don't like those Democrats, say the Republicans. And therefore, they can get caught up, you know, in personal animosity. And then those Democrats get all uptight and irritated about those Republicans. That Republican administration that's doing this or it's doing that. Let me tell you, for the last how many years, and I'll say it's at least more than 50, probably 100, it doesn't make a, you know, a tinker's worth of difference, whether it was a Democrat or a Republican or somebody else. It's the behind-the-scenes forces that have been running it anyway. They're going to do exactly what they intend and they purpose. So they merely put the one up there, allow him to be there for express reasons. As I was told by my brother when, I don't know how many of you remember the presentation they had on, was this OEPBS, on the presidents. If you'll remember, Garfield was assassinated. And Garfield was very distraught about, you know, certain advice that he was being given, a unique situation that had developed up in Washington. And so out of this distress, in his wrath or his anger, he said, "I'm president around here." To which they very quickly replied, in name only. 10 days later, when he was in San Francisco, they got rid of him. That's right, just 10 days later, they took care of him. Well, I've got news for you, too. You know, people look at Reagan today and they say, well, that man so-and-so, forget the man. Why don't we get our eyes off of what is... They want us to see men, to see other human beings, to see organizations. Reagan doesn't have anything to do with it. He only thinks he's president. Well, I don't even know that he, at the present time, thinks that. Because they served him a very good notice just a few years ago. Either you play ball or else. I wish I could honestly tell you the story of what happened to Nixon. Oh, how many people, that dirty so-and-so. What do you mean? Nixon wasn't nearly as dirty as some other men that have been in there. Not even politically. Maybe you'd better go back and read some stories. Or at least the American people had better. But Nixon wasn't going to play ball with him. That's right, we can document it. He wasn't going to play ball with him. So they said, okay, old boy, this is what happens to you. And there is scarcely an individual that you cannot assassinate character-wise. So what'd they do? They went after his character. What if they had done the same thing to Lyndon Johnson? I don't know how many books I've written, or read rather, that have been written, and I guess the most indicting was the one written by a fellow stater He was from Texas. When he himself said there probably was never a dirtier politician that lived. Okay, don't believe what you see on the surface. That's the point I'm trying to get across. Now, in that context, what we're talking about is what's going on today. And in that context, we're starting out with a fundamental premise. What is a godly work ethic? And when I get finished, you're going to see what the relationship is. But I'm going to give it to you. All right, last, we started out with where man came from. Now, let's recognize that, number one, in this world, what's happening is a rejection of God. In the field of education alone, they have done their level best to now espouse a concept of education that leaves God out of it. Now, in all the social structures of the world today, they're doing exactly the same thing. Every one of these structures socially today is designed ultimately to take your conviction of God away from you. That's its intent. And you're going to begin to place your trust there. You're going to put your confidence in that. It reminds me of the story of the young boy that had expressed his keen love and affection for God in a communist country. This is a reality. And so they said to the boy, or required that he kneel on his knees, and that he pray and ask God for bread. He'd been hungry. And so then the state brought a loaf of bread to him, and it was marked communist. This is a practice that they do regularly to youth, where they have taken the very so-called Christian practices and they have turned them around 180 degrees, and they create within the fertile minds of youth the belief that the ultimate God is the state. And they're doing it in myriad ways. Oh, that's tragic, isn't it? Isn't that a horrible thing that they would be doing that in these communist and socialistic countries? Oh, but wait a minute. We're doing it today across the board in America. That's right, it's happening here too. The only thing, they have allowed people to believe that it is the march of democracy. They always do until they get the control. And then you're chattel. Who is man? Who created him? Where did all these human beings come from that are living on the surface of this earth? Yes, man is the son of God in the physical sense. God is the father of mankind. And God set us an example involving responsibility, involving even the future. A responsibility that we are to bear. So I went through all this with you last time, where God had completed his work, then he rested, and he gave man an example of what he was supposed to do. God looked about and he saw the satisfaction of what he had done. Lo and behold, his work was good. It was perfect. Now, men can't quite measure up to the perfection of God. Does that mean they should then attempt to go the other way? No. What he intended for us to do is to struggle to that end, to labor at the achievement of that level of perfection, success, or accomplishment. So God gave work to man. He gave us the earth, and he gave us a work. He said he had given to the sons of men. He did not give it to an exclusive group. He gave it to the sons of men. He gave them the earth, remember, in Psalms 115 and verse 16. And then we find at the time that he created this earth that he gave a responsibility. He said, I've created this earth. And he said, I want you to trim it, to prune it, and I want you to take care of it. Now, God then limited the time in which we were supposed to work. He said, I want you to labor 6 days. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work. The subtlety and the perversion of God's intent and purpose has been going on for many, many hundreds of years. The very destruction of that ethic is also wrapped up in the struggle between Sabbath and Sunday. Sunday is the creation of man. It's not of God. It was the creation of man. And by the very observance of that Sunday, we religiously are announcing to the world that we'll work out our own ways. We have been religiously ensnared just as much as we have been economically, politically, socially, and every other way. God created 6 days, and God said, the seventh day is mine. You shall not work upon it. But conversely, he said, you shall work 6 days. And then you keep my seventh day. Now we've come down to our next thought. We want to get into it. But man having a futile mind, a fertile mind. Man having a fertile mind, as he looked at all this that God had created, God had laid it out. He's the creator of the world. He's the creator of man. He's the creator of mind. So he put man on this earth and he said, now here's what I've given to you. And here are now the rules by which the game is to be played. Now I want you to take care of it. I want you to assume your responsibility and to do the thing for which I created you. But men had fertile minds, and they were subject to a lot of perverse influence. And so they began to reason, as one famous bishop said, and they reasoned, so they thought, well. But they didn't. They reasoned themselves in opposition to God. And so they have been opposing God from the day of creation. Today is not unique. It is only the culmination of all the efforts that have been going on. For God has appointed 6,000 years for men to do their own thing. God still believes in his own rule. When that seventh millennium comes, man is not going to do what he thinks. I'll guarantee you that. For God looks on the 1,000 years as a day. Now that God worked 6 days and brought the earth into existence, and then he rested the seventh as an example for us, from there it arises then to the higher level, and 6,000 years he's given to man, and that seventh year, 7,000 years is a time when God is going to intervene, and let me tell you, man is not going to do his own thing. He's going to be obedient to God, or there'll be some bones broken. They are going to come down, and they're going to learn what God means when he rules this universe. And when he said, I want you to do so and so, he meant exactly that. And he meant it. It's just like parents had better mean what they say, but they'd also better live it. You can't say one thing and do something else. So man having a fertile mind was responsive to bad advice. Now here God set everything up and he gave the world to mankind. He said, I created it for his very purpose. Did he not say in Isaiah 45 and verse 18, he said, I created it not in vain, I created it to be inhabited. So when God created this earth, he created it with man in mind for the very purpose of man's possession. And he gave it to him. And then lo and behold, another counselor came along. And he said, well, now, has God said so and so to you? Yeah, I did. And I want to tell you that you can't always trust that God. I tell you that, you know, you're equal with God in every way. Why in the world are you going to allow yourself to believe that you're inferior to that being? After all, you have mind. You have capacity. Why don't you use your own intelligence now and plan these things out for yourself? And you know, men have been doing that ever since. How many times I hear human beings say, I'll make my own decisions. That day is limited. I'll assure you it's limited. It seems to be the toughest thing in the world for children growing up to really come to understand. They want to flex their muscles and their minds, and they're going to do exactly what Adam and Eve did, and they've all been doing it ever since. They get up to the age when they start thinking, and they think parents must have been born, pre-flood. And they feel sorry for them. You know, they're not chick. They're not up to date. Well, I'll tell you, it's been going on for 6,000 years or thereabouts. What's new? So whatever children are doing today is not new at all. It's the exact same thing they did from the day of Cain. Cain revolted too, you know. And you know, Cain was right in his own eyes. Why, he even rationalized with God. But that didn't make it right. Not at all. So he was then subject to this bad advice. Let's turn back to Genesis, the third chapter, and beginning in verse 1. Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said unto the woman, yea, hath God said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? Is this what God told you? That you can't reach out and do these things that are forbidden? Did somebody tell you that you didn't have right to do this or to do that? The woman said unto the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden. That is, God put certain, you know, natural barriers up, and he said, well, you can do so and so. But of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it, lest you die. And the serpent said unto the woman, you shall not surely die. And you know, human beings have been believing that from that day down to the present. At every level of society. Because what happened right here at this split instant is the thing that is going to culminate in the destruction of this earth. That's right. All these nefarious things that are going on out here are merely the ultimate manifestation of what the first parent did. And it's only grown worse ever since. And why did he do it? Because he had such love for man that he didn't want to see man restricted, that he wanted man to have his newfound liberties, rights, privileges. When will men recognize that the advice they were given back at that time that has been translated into every avenue of and disobedience and rebellion today has been the avenue of self-destruction? What Satan wanted, I don't have time to prove it now, I'm intending to do that on down the road. What Satan wants is the destruction of mankind. Why? He must have had some horrible vendetta in mind. He wanted the destruction of man And let me just give it to you in a classic nutshell. I'll prove it later on. Is that you were going to, under the auspices of Jesus Christ, take over the responsibility that very one had on this earth. You're going to replace them. It isn't any wonder that he is clever, and he employs all deception and subtlety. He would just love to destroy the totality of man, and that even means those he is using at the present time to gain his own nefarious ends. He doesn't have any love for them. They are colossally stupid in their very concepts, because they are going to be destroyed by the very one they listened to. That we shall see as we go on. So, and the serpent said unto the woman, you shall not die. For God does know that in the day you eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened. That is, you'll be wise. Or remember the long article that was done called Gnosticism? That's it. Man's knowledge, not God's knowledge. Wise now in the knowledge of man shall be opened, and you shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof, and did eat, and gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. And they have been in a defiant, rebellious relationship against God from that day down to the present. But that day is pretty close to coming to a conclusion, because there is a Sabbath coming. Now, all works, therefore, are not acceptable today. That's right. What we are saying is that God gave to them limits. He said, I want you to take care of the earth. I want you to prune it. I want you to do these various things. I want you to exercise the dominionship that I have given you over the plants, the fruits, the animals, the fowl, whatever. I want you to exercise the responsibility for which I have put you down here. But this is as far as you can go and no farther. Satan came along and said, no, you don't have to do that. God's put a fence around some things that he doesn't want you to have. Why don't you reach out and take it? And so they did. But that tells us there are some things that are going on in this world today under the auspices of that very deceit that are not acceptable with God. Then it means we'd better weigh them very seriously. In 2 Kings 19 and verse 18, we read this. 2 Kings 19 and verse 18, and have cast their gods into the fire, for they were no gods, but the work of men's hands, wood and stone, therefore they have destroyed them. All right, it's easy for us today in our ivory towers of the 20th century to look back, you know, on those poor, colossally stupid individuals back in the times of the kings, back in the times of Samaria, Phoenicia, the Akkadian kingdom and so on. We look back at those people and earlier, and we think, you know, that they were in the swaddling clothes of Christianity, dumb, stupid, crass people that didn't know what was going on. But we have graduated, and we have grown superior in intelligence and in knowledge today. I tell you, the exact opposite is the truth. We haven't grown at all. We've gone downhill. That doesn't mean we don't have more scientific knowledge, because God said that was going to become available. But in the knowledge that really basically counts, we have gone downhill. It has been a misconception, but devised by the people that have wanted to make God look like some paltry individual that had no grasp of what was going on at all. And so they have wanted to put the past in some wretched state of chaos, anarchy, or whatever, and we have progressively grown until we have gotten better and better and better. Even in religion, my dear brethren, we have been taught the concepts of evolution. And the vast majority of religions have absorbed those, education and religion, yes, have absorbed those very concepts. We have grown worse and worse and worse. We're on a downhill toboggan slide. We're not getting better. Not at all. The apex of even kingdoms was something to behold back in times past. And you know, even physically, the more they uncover archaeologically, through archaeology, biblical archaeology, also through Egyptology and other various sciences, the more they uncover some of these things, the more they find the refinement of some of those kingdoms. Not at all. But I'll tell you, the vast majority of people have been hooked on the wretchedness of this science and history, and first and foremost, history that has been absolutely perverted and turned around today and revised for the sake of destroying minds. And how many of our minds, even our brilliant minds today, quote unquote brilliant. You know, you can pour garbage into a human mind as long as you exercise it. It's a muscle. And it'll develop. But it doesn't mean you know anything. And that's what's been going on. It's a revisionist concept that's been going on for years. And the whole premise, their whole premise, is being absorbed by kids today. And especially when they get into college. Because their idea is they have a much better grasp of what's going on. Sheer idiocy. And boy, we'd better recognize it. It is not true. And our capabilities are vastly inferior to some of the greats of the past. And yet I don't even have any way of comparing what we were, you know, in the days of my grandparents, let's say, to compare what it must have been many, many years before that time. Not at all. But notice what it says. They have cast their gods into the fire. Now, all of us, we look at this and we say, poor stupid people, you know, out here, you know, they were constructing these little figurines or these little pots or, you know, these various relics that they were putting upon their mantles or, well, they didn't have a mantle, probably. Maybe they did. Maybe they had better mantles than we do. But wherever they were putting it, and here they were, you know, doing obeisance to these little wretched figurines and so on. And they look at that and they shake their heads and say, poor wretched people. But do you know they're bowing before idols that are 10,000 times worse today and they don't see it? Not at all. But here was a time they had to be brought down. And they cast their gods into the fire, for they were no gods. That's right. Why? Because they were the work of men's hands. Now, we have a lot of things that are the work of men's hands today that have become idols. Sheer idolatry. And a lot of them have backs. That is, a front and a back part, with a lot of pages in between. You get the point? Nothing but idolatry. So all things that men make, and after all, there must have been some, you know, people that had certain capabilities, you know, flares with regard to artistry or, making something out of a piece of gold or of silver or of brass or copper or something else. They must have had some skills. And as these skills, they set up their little shops, and so here they were hammering these things out. Now, was it right for them to, to be occupied in this kind of a profession? Remember, we're talking about the work ethic. Was it right for them to be hammering these little idols out, setting them up for sale? Or was it right, perhaps, for architects to sit there and go through all the design, the detail, and so on, and then they give it to the draftsman, and they sat down, and they then drew out all the specifications? And then from there, it went into the hands of the blueprinters. Well, we have every one of those professions today. And then from there, it went into the hands of the constructors. Now, do we want to work on something that is going to come to naught? Well, I have something to say about that later when we get there. Jeremiah 10. Jeremiah, the 10th chapter. And beginning in verse 7. Who would not fear thee, O King of nations? For to thee doth it appertain. For as much as among all the wise men of the nations and in all their kingdoms, there is none like unto thee. But they are altogether brutish and foolish. The stalk is a doctrine of vanities. I won't get into the technical details of this whatsoever, but what are we talking about when we say the stalk is a doctrine of vanities? Let's just say the very premise of whatever was going on was the most foolish thing undertaken. No good results were going to come from it because it had no lasting value. It had no purpose. There was no honesty nor integrity involved in it. It was ill-fated from the beginning. Silver spread into plates is brought from Tarshish and gold from Uphaz. And work of the workmen. Here they were working. Go doing the same thing that most human beings do today. They go down to their place where they fashion these things, and they take the monetary return home, and they buy the necessities of life. They feed their families. And after all, if they were to look at it, the way human beings do today, they could say, why, I've got to feed my family. Isn't that right? At the hands of the founder, blue and purple is their clothing. They are all the work of cunning men. That means craftsmen. But the Lord is the true God. He is the living God and an everlasting King. At his wrath, the earth shall tremble. That's right. And it's not long until the earth is going to experience that wrath. Why? Because of the work of men's hands. Will any of our endeavors suffer that fate? But the Lord is the true God. He is the living God and an everlasting King. At his wrath, the earth shall tremble, and the nations shall not be able to abide his indignation. So we recognize then that there are some things that are taking place, even in the day that God is going to utter his wrath, which is in the last days, that are not acceptable in his sight. They never have been. From the day of Adam and Eve down to this present time, conceptions that have then been translated into actions with end products to show for them are not acceptable in the sight of God. There are many of them. You go ahead and read. There's much more that could be said. Well, maybe I should just give you a little more of this here. Here in verse 11, I want you to read to verse 11, 15. Thus shall you say unto them, the gods that have not made the heavens and the earth, even they shall perish from the earth and from under the heavens. These strange idols that have been engineered, generated with their byproducts that have absolutely filled this earth with trash, are destined for destruction. He hath made the earth by his power. Remember, let's go back and ascertain for what reason God made it. He made it to be inhabited, didn't he? By whom? By men. To do what? To live up to his expectations. Did they? No. They thought things out for themselves. They were going to do it their way. But it's ill-fated. He hath made the earth by his power. He hath established the world by his wisdom. And therefore there is wisdom behind it. And also, therefore, there is wisdom in living up to those expectations. And hath stretched out the heavens by his discretion. When he uttereth his voice, there is a multitude of waters in the heavens. And he causes the vapors to ascend from the ends of the earth. It is God who has created the cycle of rain. Remember, rain is first sucked up, and then it is re-delivered strategically upon this earth. The vapors to ascend from the ends of the earth. He maketh lightnings with rain, and bringeth forth the wind out of his treasuries. Every man is brutish in his own knowledge. When is this, my dear brethren? At the time that God is going to powerfully intervene, which means in the culmination of these 6,000 years, every man is brutish in his own knowledge. Every founder is confounded by the graven image. They stand in wretched awe of the creations of their own hearts and their own minds. For his molten image is falsehood. Something has been going on here that has no premise. It has no foundation. It's as false itself. And there is no breath in them. They are vanity and the work of errors. In the time of their visitation, they shall perish. There are a lot of things that are going to go off the scene. Will you sustain loss? Will we have been involved in activities, actions, ways that are contrary to God? And therefore, we're going to sustain complete loss? Because whatever we have done is destined for destruction. It's ill-fated. You know, that could be a tragic experience. How many of us would like to go out into the very honorable profession of building? And every time we complete something, it's wiped out instantaneously. Make you feel good, wouldn't it? You never get a chance to look at it and say, that's the kind of a job that I do. There is a reflection of the character by which I live. There is a manifestation of the integrity that motivates my life. You bring it to fruition, and it's gone. It's lost. There are many things today that you're only permitted to exercise momentarily, to close the eyes, to gloss over, and then they're going to be pulled from you. There are many things that are happening in that way today. Now, fifth, conditions of work resulting from the pursuit of a bad advice. What now has happened because we didn't really abide by the principles of God? What kind of physical circumstances befell us because of this bad advice that we saw as a human race so readily gobbled up? Now we have to work in difficult circumstances. It hasn't been made easy for us. Curses befell us. Just exactly as curses are going to befall those that are working on vanities that are destined for destruction. Here in Genesis 3, Genesis the third chapter, let's go back and get a little of the historical circumstances again, beginning in verse 7. And the eyes of them both were opened, and they knew that they were naked. How did they find this out? I won't go into the circumstances. We're not talking about just physical nakedness at all. So much of the Bible is allegory. Now, how did they know that they were naked? Now, how in the world is the world itself, humanity upon this world, going to finally recognize that it is completely naked before God in the day of revelation? As it happened to our parents, so it is going to happen to the whole of humanity in the appointed time. That day is inevitable. And when God appears, and he walks up and down the earth which he created and gave to man, where are they going to run to hide themselves? Remember, Adam and Eve did. And they heard, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed the fig leaves together and made themselves aprons. They were going to try to take care of their own nakedness in their own way. Now, there's nothing wrong with sewing clothing. That's not what we're talking about. That doesn't answer the issue here. It begs it. What we're talking about is it did not face the liability. Why in the world did they come to recognize this in the first place? Because they were wrong. And they heard the voice of the Lord God walking in the garden in the cool of the day. And they're going to hear it again, too. When he arises mightily to shake this earth, and his voice is going to peal out from on high. I'll tell you, they're not going to be very brave in those days because they're going to run. They're even going to seek to the rocks. They're going to race to the mountains. They're going to do anything. If anything, will just close out that view. Hide them from the presence of God. Or they're going to have to face it once again. And Adam and his wife hid themselves from the presence of the Lord. And you know they've been doing that from that day down to the present. They've been doing that principally in the name of education, which includes religion. Amongst the trees of the garden, the garden of their own minds. And the Lord God called unto Adam and said unto him, "Where art thou?" And he said, "I heard thy voice in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, and I hid myself." And he said, "Who told you that you were naked?" Now, why in the world would he ask a question like that? Why didn't he just look down? He could find out. See, that wasn't the issue. The issue was knowledge. Who told you? "Hast thou eaten of the tree whereof I commanded thee that thou shouldest not?" Did you violate some cardinal principles of education? And the man said, "The woman whom thou gavest to be with me." Now here's the first thing that happens. See, Here, God went to the responsible individual, and he, you know, he's going to call him into reckoning. And the first thing he did is said, well, that thing you gave me is the one that did it. Oh, but she wasn't going to bear the liability. So the first thing she did said, well, that thing that appeared down here, he's the one that did so and so. So we start passing the buck. And that's what all human beings do. And then God finally said some things to them. He said, I'm going to put enmity between you and the woman. As he cursed this devil, Satan. And between thy seed and her seed. And that's been going on all this time. It shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel. Unto the woman he said, I will greatly multiply thy sorrow and thy conception. Is there any woman that doubts this? In sorrow thou shalt bring forth children, and thy desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee. And unto Adam he said, behold, thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree, of which I commanded thee, saying, your efforts are not honorable. You began to use your own minds, and you claimed the freedom to use your own mind rather than to sustain the restrictions that I gave to you. Now what's going to happen? Thou shalt hearken unto the voice of thy wife. Thou hast eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it. Cursed is the ground for thy sake. And so labor today, whether it should be agriculture, industrial, or whatever, has been fraught with tears, with accident, with injury, with sweat, with turmoil, with strife. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee. Any of you doubt that? Go out and look at the garden. And thou shalt eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread till thou return unto the ground. For out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return. And the only thing I have to do is look at the fact that every man, I don't care what his educational philosophy is, ultimately dies. And where does he go? Right back to the soil from whence he was taken. The living proof that God knew exactly what he was talking about. That's the living proof. Now, there is more I want to say about this, but I want to get into other texts that I shall do at another time. But there is much more on this subject of the work ethic. And when I've completed that, then I'm going into this matter of the rich versus the poor, curses versus blessings, and a host of other subjects. And they're all going to be explained in a way that we're going to understand what these social issues are all about.
The Church of God the Eternal has just presented The Exploitation of Social Issues. Of the subtopic entitled, What is a Godly Work Ethic? This was the number 2 tape and was given by Mr. Raymond Cole.